The kilogram, as we know it, is about to be retired. A vote on the matter will take place tomorrow at the General Conference on Weights and Measures in France. Here to explain why research filter Joseph Milton from the Australian Science Media Centre in Adelaide joins us. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Patricia. How are you?
Well, I'm worried. What's wrong with the old kilo?
Oh, you're worried about the poor old
kilo? Well, I understand the kilo. This is the problem. I get the kilo. I know what a kilo feels like. Why would anyone want to retire it?
Well, don't worry. It's not going to change very much. But it's really because, like many of us, when we're getting a bit older, the kilo is gaining weight. Or it may even be losing weight. We're not entirely sure which. But it's now 130 years old, and it's actually an object. It's called the Grand K, and it's kept in France. It was made in 1889, and that's been our standard kilogram. So most of our weight measures, things like that, they're all based on physical constants. And this is one of the few left that's actually based on a solid object. And because that object is changing slightly over the years, it's time we got a more exact definition of what exactly a kilogram is. That's kind of the thinking.
What's the process for establishing a new definition?
Lots of debate. Decades, in fact, at least 20 years in this case. Lots of testing and experiments. And then, as you mentioned just a moment ago, it then comes down to a vote at this meeting, which is taking place tomorrow. And then we'll decide whether we get the new kilogram.
So what will it mean for us members of the general public? Me, you know, buying a kilo of apples, you know, talking about losing a couple of kilos. These kind of kilos, I'm always talking in kilos. Does it change much for us?
No, not really. Because if the old kilogram is off, and it probably is a little bit, it's going to be by minute fractions of a gram. So not very many apples or not very much sugar, really. It's really more important when extremely precise measurements are required, when we're building scientific equipment or when we're measuring really, really tiny or really, really massive things. So this is just going to give us a definition of the kilo, which is universal rather than based on just a single object in France.
Okay, I feel satisfied by your answer. Thank you. On a different topic, we've often been told to avoid multitasking, although some of us are very proud of our multitasking abilities. But a new study says it's actually not as bad practice as we thought, which, of course, makes me very happy. How is that?
Well, I've got some bad news for you to start with, Patricia, is that multitasking doesn't exist. It's not a thing. There's lots of research that suggests that we can't do it. We can't pay attention to two tasks at the same time. So when we're multitasking, we actually just kind of rapidly switch between those two tasks. And all that switching means we don't tend to do the best job of any of those tasks. But what this research is saying is slightly different. Rather than saying whether or not we're multitasking, this is about whether or not we think we're multitasking. And if we think we're multitasking, we do a better job of the task at hand.
So we've got to be really actively aware that we're multitasking.
That's it. We've got to figure out a way to convince ourselves that every task is multitasking and then we'll do a better job of that task.
Why so? I mean, why does the thinking that it's multitasking change the nature of it being done well? I don't get it.
Well, it's really all about our perception of the task and what we put into it. So if we are handed something that seems like more of a challenge, we'll rise to that challenge and we'll be more alert, we'll work harder and we'll do a better job. So if we think we've got a tricky task on our hands, a multitask, then we're likely to work at it a bit harder than if we think we're just working at one thing. And that's probably why we do a better job.
Okay, sort of makes sense. Is it enough to restore the reputation of multitasking, which has really taken a hammering?
Not really, because there is a lot of research now that suggests that we just can't really do it. And all that switching between tasks means we tend to just do a worse job overall. But this is really interesting. Like we were saying, all we have to do is convince ourselves that we're multitasking when we're not, and we can do a great job of everything.
Fabulous. Now, finally, this last topic concerns me for real. Are giraffes at risk of extinction?
Well, some are. And this is the latest data from the IUCN, that's the International Union for the Conservation of Nature. And they release those lists periodically called the Red List. And that's the list of all the plants and animals that are threatened, endangered, what their status is, really. And they've found that some giraffes are on the list as critically endangered. And that means things are looking pretty dicey for them, because that's just one small step away from extinction. But it's kind of complicated, because we used to think there was just a single species of giraffe. And that was until quite recently, when scientists started to suggest that actually there's probably more than one species. And what we'd thought of as one species was actually several. So a couple of years ago, they suggested making it four species. The IUCN actually just recognizes one species of giraffe, but nine subspecies within it. And this report looked at those nine subspecies or populations. Now, the reason to think that they're probably not one species is because they don't interbreed. And that means if we lose one of those subspecies or populations, there's no getting it back. And some of those are in really pretty bad trouble.
So what are the giraffes' chances of making a comeback?
Well, there is some good news, luckily. They're doing really well in parts of southern Africa where conservation efforts have been really successful. The Angolan giraffe, which lives in Botswana, Namibia and Zimbabwe, is out of danger and is listed as of least concern. And there's a couple of other of these groups that they looked at where they've actually downgraded the status. So things have improved for some of them. But then very urgent conservation work is needed for the Kordofan giraffe, which has fewer than 2,000 left, and the Nubian giraffe, which is down to about 650. If they go, they go. But luckily, some populations or subspecies or species, no one's really decided what it is yet. Some will probably hang on, which is good news.
So it's kind of mixed news, if anything. I love giraffes, so I'm kind of glad to hear some of it, but not all of it. Thanks for your time, Joseph.
That's been a pleasure, Patricia.